Listen up, couch potatoes. Go dust off your square 80s TV and turn the dial to terror. We just watched Terrorvision, and we're beaming straight into your rotted brain on...
B-Movie Media!
Holy tomato.
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania! And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and crazy Chris Hudson.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another exciting installment of B-Movie Mania. I'm your host today, Jason Hulls, and with me, as always, is Michael Hayes. I believe that's Terrorvision creature for Hi Jay. Glad to be here.
Yes.
And we have crazy Chris Hudson.
Yuck. He is so nasty.
Yeah, baby. Hudson swings that way. I know that.
Oh, we're going to be talking about swinging. We watched what I feel to be a pretty amazing movie. It is released in 1986. It is Terrorvision, a Charles Band production. And I forgot that it was a Charles Band production.
Yeah, I had no idea until I saw it on the credits. Like, holy shit, Charles Band.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense once into like the third act of this movie.
Totally. And does. I don't know if we've ever brought this up on this podcast, but you know, Paul and I met Charles Band.
Oh, that's right.
we've brought it up like five times, but we'll post the same photo again on our website just to prove it.
Of course,
the same photo you can find on like five other episodes.
He's done so much. I think this came out a couple years before he started Full Moon Features.
Yeah, you know what? I think you're right.
This is on Epic or whatever it is. Yeah.
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 Which he owned before this. He just owned this, and then I don't know what happened, but Full Moon is what him and the other people who made this movie then went on to create.
Yep. Yeah. And this movie has a pretty great cast. We should chat about that.
Oh boy.
Got some Diane Franklin.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
You got Chad Allen, baby.
Chad Allen. We got
the principal from Rock and Roll High School.
Burt Remsen, man, the old grandpa guy in this. He's in a whole bunch of shit.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. Even Frank Welker, probably the most prolific voice actor of all time, has a little voiceover part in it.
Really?
And we haven't said John Grise yet, guys. John Grise.
Well, we're saving the best for last.
The King Vidiot, Uncle Rico. Mm-hmm.
Hell.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, he's so amazing.
he does not disappoint in this one.
Directed by Ted Nicolau, I believe it's pronounced.
Sure.
So we're going to go with that pronunciation. Sorry, Ted, if that's a little off. Let me give you guys a quick plot for those of you who have not seen or heard of Terrorvision. We have a man named Stan who installs a state-of-the-art television satellite system for his dysfunctional family. However, he accidentally picks up a signal from another planet, and his television system becomes the gateway between two planets.
Whoops!
A ravenous creature comes to his apartment. Actually, it's his house, and only their son Sherman, played by a young Chad Allen, sees the monster, but his parents do not believe the boy. That was written by Claudio from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, so thank you, Claudio, for that little IMDb synopsis.
Yeah, Claudio!
You know, hearing that makes me think that, was this financed by the cable industry? Because what better way to tell everyone that your competitor, satellite television, sucks than to create a whole movie about a monster coming out of your satellite?
Well, I can tell you how this was created. Charles Band actually had the poster for the film before, I believe before the title, certainly before the script.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, he had a poster and he's like, I can sell this concept on this poster. Somebody make me this movie. And I don't know what it is, but make a movie based on this poster.
Charles Band is just the modern day Ed Wood. Just,
yeah.
Here's a concept, I can do it.
Can you do that anymore? I mean, is that even a thing that could happen these days? Could you just have a poster and like get money somehow?
Well, Jay,
and
then,
I don't know.
Yes.
This movie is proof that you could at least do it in the 80s.
Oh,
that is what many failed Kickstarter movies have been.
You're right.
Look, I got this awesome poster.
I'm sure one or two of them came through, but you know,
I guess I should say I did try that. I did try the same thing with my short Citizen in the Temple on Amazon.
Really?
Yeah, I had a poster designed, and then I went around showing it to people to like secure locations and stuff, and they did say like, "Oh, this looks really professional and serious." So they let me shoot in places. So I guess it kind of worked for me, but
if
I didn't.
You're good at Photoshop. You can do anything.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of how I live my life. I just, you know, get a poster and like, "Hey, I want to do that today."
That's how I became your friend. I saw a photo, a poster of you, and I'm like, yeah. I'll hang out with this guy.
Hey, be my friend.
The 2-foot-long hair and mirrored shades really sold it for me back in 1990s.
Quick takes!
Talk about the theme song? Oh, we'll get to that.
We will get to the theme song. I can't wait. Wait, okay, fine. Chris, how does the theme song go?
Oh, God damn it. I can't even do the... Like, I don't even remember the words right now. That's as close as I'm going to get.
I don't think our listeners caught that. Could you try it one more time? I didn't hear it. I think my internet
I just want to say, I'm gonna segue this into my quick take, is that I've seen this movie before, but I was like 12. And it's haunted me for the last 30-something years. And that theme song has always... I don't remember anything about this movie. I just remember really liking it as a kid. But that theme song has been haunting me for decades. And then when I heard, when the opening credits started and that song came up, I was like transported.
You mean this song?
That's the one. When I heard that song, I was transported. And it's like suddenly, it's like the insanity that... song has caused my brain for the last few decades. Just, it's gone and I feel normal again. So thank you, Jay, for curing me.
Hey, no problem. Mike, what'd you think?
Also, this movie's great.
This movie's like rude, dude. To quote the King Vidiot himself, which speaking of that sound, that theme song, King Vidiot, aka John Grease, has the ultimate honor of being in a movie with the worst custom theme song I've ever heard, this one, and the best custom theme song I've ever heard, which is Joysticks. I mean, Fungicide is 20 times better than this theme song.
Oh, man.
It's just weird. It's just weirdly high-pitched, and it's just not catchy and weird, and I don't know how this theme song was supposed to rocket a band into fame or something, and it fucking didn't.
I disagree with the catchiness of this song, Mike, because it has been in my head for 30-something years.
And what does that say about your head? Anyway, Jay, what's your quick take?
Well, you know, I had never seen this movie, but I had wanted to for a long time, and I'm glad I chose it, because I thought it was, I mean, pretty much a blast the whole way through. I think it was pretty fast-paced, and I really liked it. I had a good time.
That's my first time as well. I was a virgin with this as well.
And now we have rotted brains.
Yeah, you know.
So where does this movie take place, Mike? Where do we start? Because it didn't start where I expected the movie to start.
Oh, it started in space or on a planet somewhere, whichever one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like an alien guy.
It's the planet Pluton.
Pluton.
Oh, I'm
where
sorry.
It starts, yeah.
Okay, so on Pluton, there's this alien guy and he's got a pet up there, or a monster. We don't know it's a pet. But a monster, and then the monster gets shot out into space, like as some sort of like transmission, and it bounces around a bunch of planets like it's pinball, and then it lands on Earth, I guess.
See, yeah. It's a good thing those other planets didn't have any sort of satellite reception like Earth does, because they would have been screwed.
No,
so
they were
just bounced around.
Purely reflective, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, and can we just right off the bat talk about what the monster looks like?
Please do. Please do.
Well, I saw the Blu-ray behind the scenes, like, making of this movie where they interviewed a bunch of people and stuff. And the creature designer was actually a pretty accomplished guy. He had done a lot of work. And and so the director goes to him and only gave him one direction. He's like, just make the monster look really stupid. Like, that's it. He just told him to make it look dumb.
He did a great job.
And he referred to it as like a booger or a turd. Or it's just like, it looks dumb. It's supposed to.
It kind of looks like the one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater got shunted in society.
That's a great description. It is. Yeah. It's just a mess of it eyes is. And mouths and tentacles and...
one very phallic looking eye. It's on the end of a tentacle. It's...
Yeah. I think that's its central eye, if you ask me. But
yeah, well, the other two look pretty derpy. So I think, that point one is the one that's able to really at least focus.
Yeah, they said like they had between like every single take, they had to slather more and more slime on it. And it was dripping off and staining carpets and staining everything.
Oh, kind of like it does in the movie.
Yeah. It was built in like four pieces, and like they had like two guys in there trying to make the thing move.
God, are you sure it was slime and not sexual lubricant?
I'm not sure.
I mean, they had a whole hot tub or a jacuzzi full of sexual lubricant. There's plenty to go around.
Well,
yeah, they did.
We're introduced to the characters in this movie very quickly, because the whole movie pretty much takes place at a house. So, Chris, who do we got in the family?
You know, I'm drawing a blank on everyone's names, but we basically have your standard family. We've got the mom, the dad, we got a brother, we got a sister.
Wow, thanks for that.
That's what I'm here for, giving the insights.
We've got a mom and a dad, Stanley and Raquel Putterman. It's the Putterman family. We have Susie's, this punk rock daughter with
very
some crazy
Cindy
makeup.
Like.
And then Sherman Putman or Putterman is the son. And he's kind of the main character of the movie, the central focus, really. And then we've also got Gramps Putterman, who shows up dressed like fucking General Hershey Bar, which is an old Vietnam protest character that a guy used to do. And I was like, that guy looks really familiar. And I thought it was literally that same guy, but it's not, just someone dressed up as him. But he's dressed up like a wild Vietnam vet who's carrying a sign that says, eat lizard tails. It's a replenishable food source.
And I got to say, though, Gramps is a total info warrior. He is. I mean, if he lived today, he would be listening to Alex Jones and the whole thing. You know,
totally.
Especially with this lizard tails, the self-regenerating food source for survival.
Satellites, you say? I wonder if it could pick up recon satellites, keep track of enemy troop movements. Hey, it might be a handy little addition to my home defense unit.
I think it's also very worth mentioning what their house looks like.
Yes.
It's like a swinger nightmare.
Well, I gotta say, the Pleasure Dome looks a lot like that opening scene from A Clockwork Orange with the breast fountains and everything.
They do have a Pleasure Dome.
Ta-da! The Pleasure Dome!
Wow! Now this is what I call romantic.
Magnificent architects, your...
Yeah. Listener, that being said, inside of this giant house, it's a family's house, but it looks just like a giant coked up 80s swingers pad. And there's literally a room called the Pleasure Dome in it.
The Pleasure Dome!
This is where two grown adults raise two not adult children. And that is what happens in this film.
You know, there are statues where, like, the nipples are shooting water, naked women statues. There's, like, pornography paintings on all the walls. And
I don't know how I was allowed to watch this as a 12-year-old.
I don't know how Sherman was allowed to be in it.
No, how was any... Yeah, man. An interesting fact, according to someone on IMDb, the director and the production designer scouted swingers pads around Los Angeles to get an idea of what the house should look like.
Yes.
Oh, like, God. They went to actual swingers pads to see what it looked like so they could make an accurate portrayal. And I think that is something that is lacking this day in Hollywood.
All that research, yeah, yeah. You don't go to, like, superheroes' homes to see how their headquarters are made for the Marvel movies.
Guys,
I saw
Avengers Endgame, and guess what? Disappointed on the lack of representation of swingers' pads, okay?
Well, okay, Mike, I can confirm that that is true because the director said that in his interview. Also, when Sherman's parents, like his real parents, were sort of walking around the set looking at things.
No.
They let him do it. And
were they swingers?
They interviewed Sherman, and he's like our age now or whatever. And he was like, you know, they're real Catholic and everything. And they just asked, like, could you please maybe try to like frame our son out of the image with the pictures if you can? So they knew, but, you know, they weren't.
But hey, those paintings were tastefully done.
It was art.
Hey, the other swingers they bring home later thought it was an amazing
house. Yeah. Oh, I love those. Those swingers are hilarious.
Yeah, a lot of the artwork looks like Patrick Nagel artwork, which is like something you'd see a lot in the 80s and like 90s. That was like, you'd see it a lot in like
salons
and stuff
about.
With
yeah,
sharp.
Yeah.
Like a lot of it kind of looked like that. I thought that's what it was at first, but yeah. I don't believe that as a confirmation.
So we have a lot of eccentric people here right off the bat. And the first thing that's happening here is Stan Putterman is hooking up this big satellite.
The do-it-yourself 100.
There we go. And mom's doing yoga. And another fun fact. All these fun facts are coming out from watching the Blu-ray documentary. The mom, she's in tons of things.
She was in the beginning of Chopping Mall.
Chopping Mall, of course.
Yeah. I mentioned Rock and Roll High School.
Yeah.
And tons of stuff.
Lots of movies. And so she's doing yoga, and she was originally supposed to be, I believe, auditioning for the role of Medusa. She read the script and was like, well, that's what everyone would expect. I would really like to play the mom. And so the director's like, sure. Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great.
She was great. She was great.
Yeah. They're just quirky.
What's the difference between those two roles, though? Like, why would you expect her to be Medusa over the mom?
Probably more to do. Just, yeah, more to do.
Okay, so you're saying they would... I was thinking visually and physically, they would expect her... Because I'm like, they're both sexual roles.
Yeah.
So I thought, I don't see much of a difference between the two that way. But yes, as maybe she's been known for the bit parts before this. So in which case, having a longer, more pronounced role, I guess that could be the different thing.
Could be. But so the first thing that's going on is dad is putting the do-it-yourself 100. We have the salesman, the TV satellite salesman, Norton. He's over having a beer, checking out the mom doing yoga.
Lay off me, beautiful. I almost got this baby wired.
We got grandpa there visiting Sherman. And pretty much like the big first thing is that like this blast from space hits the satellite, right?
Man, I've never seen anything like that before.
So then we got the family gathering. They're watching TV. Grandpa's not a big fan, I believe, of television.
Well, until Medusa comes on. I mean, he seems pretty enthusiastic about Medusa.
And what is... Okay, we've said Medusa a few times now. Let's talk about what Medusa is. What is Medusa?
Well, she is... She's like a kind of an Elvira character, I guess would be the most familiar one you'd know from the 80s. But I guess like Svengoolie. Any of these guys that... any of these horror, late night horror movie hosts on, you know, independent television stations. She's hosting movies, kind of giving a little commentary between commercial breaks, that sort of thing. Yeah?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy tomato.
Except she's got a lot of cleavage, like more than Elvira. Like way
you think?
More. Yeah. Yeah. But she's got like these like little snakes on her head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Elvira's got a lot of fucking cleavage, man.
And
like, I know Medusa's supposed to be kind of a joke, like she's a satire, but Elvira's got some fucking cleave going. Like, there's a lot of fucking cleave.
All right, well, we'll call it even then.
The doorbell rings, and Susie, who, you know, is Diane Franklin in this movie, who is a super punked out, yet kind of Valley Girl talking punk.
Hey, my TV flipped out. I missed the new Noodles video.
Yeah, but she looks like Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, she opens up the door for her boyfriend, O.D.
O.D. Charge!
You gotta come in. My parents want to meet you.
Oh, wow. What a drag.
Yeah, baby. Yep.
I love O.D. in this movie, and I am considering adopting his look from now on.
Oh, yeah?
Nice.
Yeah. You're just jealous of that hair.
Well, I'll get a wig.
Not only that, but it might save you from any satellite television-enabled monsters.
That's true.
I think O.D. was probably my favorite character of the movie, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's great.
He's so a great. Super punk. Straight up studded gauntlets.
See, they say punk, but he's all heavy metal. He's got a Wasp t-shirt on.
Yeah. He's in a band,
he's
right?
He's heavy metal, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, little dude. You into metal? Kiss the boot, man.
Kiss the ass, bozo.
He looks like your typical, like mid-80s heavy metal fan.
Yeah.
You know, with the metal studs, lots of leather.
Yeah.
You know, long hair. Oh, he's talking like, dude.
I saw his part of the interview. He was mentioning when he auditioned for the role, he had, like, the wig and just went in with his shirt off. And did the part. And he got the part. And then when they were doing, he was acting this, he said several times he had to talk to the director and ask if he was going too far over the top. Because he's like, I feel like I'm going way too far here. And the director's like, no. You're good.
You need to ramp it up a little bit more.
Oh, man.
This whole movie, over the top.
Pretty much so like campy. Every time he talked, I was so just so into it.
Yeah, buzz off, dude. I want to party.
My favorite line is I forget why she yells this, but the daughter at some point yells, Squidsville! And in disgust about something, and it's so fucking good.
Oh, yeah, God damn it. Yeah.
Well, OD and Susie want to use the jacuzzi. You know, that night in the Pleasure Dome. And the parents, they just say no because they might be swinging later.
Mom, can we use the jacuzzi tonight?
Not tonight, baby. Your father and I might be swinging.
Yeah. The parents are so open about being swingers. And it's amazing. And it's funny because they live in this whole house that we've described that is a sex pad. And they have a special Pleasure Dome. But we find out later that they've only tried swinging a few times before.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe this is like a vision board of a house where they've just been like putting it out there and eventually it's going to happen for them. Yeah.
It's like the field of dreams for sexiness.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I got to say though real quick that one of my favorite gags in this is when they're getting ready for their swinging night out. And they're talking about OD and the mom thinks he's kind of cute, but you know, the punk thing's just a phase. The dad's like, can you believe the way he's dressed? You know, it's such, so ridiculous. Meanwhile, he's putting on his medallions in his like stereotypically 1970s swinging looking outfit with the 8 buttons unbuttoned. It's such a great little gag.
Yeah.
Loved that.
Okay, so yes, the parents leave. Grandpa's supposed to stay with Sherman. We don't really know what happens to O.D. and Susie, right? Like, they're just kind of gone.
They just go out, yeah.
I think they just leave, I don't know if it explains it or not, but it doesn't matter. They're gone.
It's just Gramps and Sherm.
The satellite guy, the satellite salesman is supposed to stop by because the TV's acting kind of weird.
Yeah.
I mean, that'll happen when you've picked up an intergalactic monster.
Yeah, and we are seeing that there's goop, you know, draining from the satellite box. They kind of cut to that every once in a while.
Well, that's why the satellite guy hates the do-it-yourselfers.
So let's talk about the first time the monster pops out here.
It doesn't just pop out.
Okay, it crawls out of the TV.
It sticks its tentacle eye, creeps it slowly out of the TV, up into the fucking blanket with the young boy, and just slithers on up next to him. Until it wakes the boy up, and the boy wakes up to a giant dick eye in his face.
You know, it's a good thing they have a giant bunker in the house. That's another wing of the house.
I love this. Yeah, they've just got the sex dome. They have the sex den, which we haven't even talked about yet.
The pleasure den.
Wow.
And then we've got the bunker.
Oh, it is a doomsday prepper's wet dream.
Oh, God, yeah.
There's
yeah.
machine guns, there's grenades, a heavy door.
Plastic explosives.
Yes, okay, so Gramps and Sherman are in the bunker.
Yes, they are.
Unfortunately, Norton shows up at this time, the salesman.
Satellite repairman.
Yep. Yeah. Poor guy.
Gramps and Sherman confront him, right? Because they think he might be...
All right, yeah, he might be the burglar with the Halloween mask.
Or the giant eye, Mike, as you put it.
Giant dick eye, I believe.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah. He could be that, but he's not because he's clearly human. And it gets him. We're just going to put it out there. The creature gets him while he's trying to fix the satellite.
We don't really see it happen, though.
It's
mainly, we just see it. You know, he screams and then it's like, Gramps is sneaking a drink of whiskey and doesn't hear shit. But Sherman's all about like, Gramps, did you hear that?
Yeah.
He's got those young ears.
And who's the next one to go? This kind of surprised me.
This was very surprising, yeah.
Gramps. They use Gramps to reveal just how, how the monster works. The monster's got what? What?
A huge, disgusting tongue.
Well, yes. But the monster's got this this hook hand.
Oh, the like mandible claw.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it grips Gramps' temples, basically.
Gramps talked about you got to get the brain shot.
Yeah. So he got a brain shot, literally, because it injects fucking whatever digestive fluid into the victim and digests the victim.
It's green.
It turns them into just green slime.
Doesn't it show a shot of Gramps' pants or something and slime just like a bucket of slime hits the floor?
I thought it was just crushing his head at first because you see a shot of his head being crushed, but then it instantly cuts down to his where his socks would be, and it just slime comes out of his pants. And then you're like, oh, I guess he just got digested, and then
he gets digested eternally, and then
and the monster, when it licks it up, it's got a tongue the size of, it took a man's arm inside the puppet to waggle this giant tongue with these little spines and stuff on it. It's this big, nasty tongue.
It is amazing.
Yeah. And it was fairly disgusting, to be honest.
It was.
Yeah. They did a pretty good job with those effects.
Though not as disgusting, I would say, as when we see little Sherman run back into the bunker to get safe. And that's when you realize that Gramps has like four Confederate flags hanging up in there. And you're like, oh, I guess it's fine. He's dead. Who gives a shit?
Well, we did say he was an Alex Jones InfoWars guy.
Yeah, well, it obviously becomes very obvious at that point, though. I was bummed that Gramps died. And then I saw that, I'm like, never mind.
All right. So Sherman's hiding out in the bunker. He's trying to call the cops. They don't want to listen because he's a kid. Pretty soon, Mom and Dad get back with some friends. Spiro and Cherry.
Oh, Spiro.
I love Spiro.
Creating life and taking it away like the gods of the ancient Greeks.
So great. Oh, it's so great.
What is he Italian?
He's Greek. He's Greek.
Oh, that's right. He's Greek.
He's totally about like everything. He's like, is that Greek decor? Nah, it's Roman. He loves Greek history. He loves the... almost everything about he says has something to do with Greek culture, like from antiquity.
And he's so full of zest.
He's a great character. Great. I really like him.
He's a manly man.
A manly man.
He's a real manly man.
The manliest of men.
But he doesn't mean it in like a testosterone, like, I'm a don't touch soy kind of a thing. He's not like that manly man. He's just like a genuinely confident man is what he is.
That likes boys.
What?
He's a genuine confident man.
Yeah.
That likes boys.
Well, and women. He likes
men. And women.
He's a sexual beast.
Oh my God, is he? My God. He wants to know. I mean, does he take it like a man? I mean, yeah, he totally does.
Yeah, he does.
That's who he is.
Spiro's takes
it
like
Spiro,
a man.
I don't know why, but I just feel like that character should have been a part of like a Tarantino movie or something.
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
I totally could see him, that actor. And unfortunately, that actor passed away, I think, the year after this movie came out. But,
That's too bad,
He was great. Cherry was pretty good, too.
Wow, this place is like really awesome.
But so they kind of pair off with the Puttermans. Raquel is her name? Is that the mom's name?
Yeah. Yes.
She goes now with Spiro, and Stan goes with Cherry in the Pleasure Dome, and she wants to swim.
Babe, it's a perfect 98.6. It's like floating in your mother's womb.
And holy tomatoes. Does Stan want to swim with her?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he does. Yes, he does. Yeah, the Pleasure Dome, if I may say, is what they call it, full title every time. But it has this huge whirlpool, bubble pool thing in the middle, and it's got a TV and a loud stereo, and it's got Roman architecture, paintings and stuff around, and the pool is a perfect 98.6, so it feels like you're floating in your mother's womb. But what I noticed, and please don't at me about this, because I'm sure we could figure it out, but I noticed there's very little places for getting down and dirty. You got the pool. You can fuck in the pool. I get it. But everything else around it were these tiny little, like, benches. Well, just Mike, little benches.
Mike, to be fair, they've only swung a couple times.
Yeah.
They haven't figured that out yet. That's true. They, you know, it's kind of like, is their experience, as they getting more experience, they'll figure out what works, what doesn't work.
That's
you know,
right.
Try some new things.
And it maybe, had what they thought it should look like, but that doesn't necessarily mean it had what it needed.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
tonight would be the night that they, you know, have a foursome on one of these little benches and realize, we need a little more room for this. You know, or maybe a suspended swing in a corner or something. Mm-hmm. You
or
know?
Or maybe some sort of phallic monster eyeball.
Oh, could they got that covered.
Oh, well, okay, yeah, you're right.
We should also point out that when Spiro and Raquel go to get the drinks, I think it's right around here, she notices a big puddle on the floor that is Grandpa.
That just used to be Grandpa.
Yeah, she doesn't know what it is, but she touches it.
I literally, in my notes, just all caps, don't touch that fucking pile that looks like vomit, you fucking insane person.
It's clothes in a big puddle.
It looks like vomit, so don't touch it with your fingers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just found the exact quote. I wrote down the quote. Is Sherman replies to that puddle.
Sherman, what have you done?
That's what Grandpa was.
That's what Gramps was.
And so she goes, dips her fingers in. I would have expected her to just lick it, too. Like, what is this?
Yeah.
It was fucking disgusting.
And Sherman is getting in the way of things because he's running around with an M16 in the swinger party.
He's his Gramps' grandson, buddy. Yep. He's got M16. He's got grenades hanging off of his body. And we find out it's live. It's not a fucking toy gun.
No, it's real.
But I got to say, he has terrible, terrible trigger discipline. Let me tell you that right now. It's terrible.
And so the parents rightfully get a little annoyed with Sherm. And they go to lock him in the bunker, and he's, you know, crowing about how Grandpa's dead. And the monster here pulls a fast one, which kind of becomes important. Well, later on.
Yeah.
So they open up the bunker door, and Grandpa's down there, right? Is Grandpa back alive and everything's okay?
Oh, you know what? Actually, no. Gramps is a puppet. Totally a puppet. Yeah.
Operated by our monster.
Operated by the monster.
Yep.
Yeah,
and with perfect vocal pitch.
confusing because later in the movie the monster speaks and it's really bad at it.
Yeah.
And
most of the time the monster's just like,
yeah, exactly. But somehow he's able to use a perfect ventriloquist of the dead body.
Sherman gets locked down into the bunker with, well, fake Gramps so that the parents can get back to business. We do see also the warning from Pluthar.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. We see it throughout the movie, yeah. We don't hear it at first, though.
Right. It's just on television. Let's see. Sherman gets the idea to call Medusa because the cops won't listen to
him.
Yeah,
she's on the TV, yeah.
Right. And she doesn't really want anything to do with him either.
Yeah. I mean, it turns out when he's in the bunker with fake Gramps that the monster's no longer in there. The monster has somehow escaped.
Yeah, it's gone back to the TV that's in the bunker. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. What?
So the parents are getting heated up here. When Stan Putterman goes back in to see Cherry, Cherry's been swimming, right? I thought this was a pretty cool shot because now the pool's all foggy.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah. Let's talk about this. Like,
well, I think it was Spiro going in.
Oh, that's right. It was Spiro because Stan's getting ready with his bathing suit, and Spiro comes back in.
This is after the whole man's man conversation.
The manly man.
And when the wife, man, I forgot her name again.
Raquel.
And she Raquel, when Raquel tells her husband that, you know, he likes boys. He's really into you. So, you know, Raquel's not getting much out of the swingers night.
To be fair, I think we need to say he likes men. He doesn't like boys. He's not going after Sherman.
Okay, you know
he's
what?
He's going after
I apologize. I apologize, Mike. You're correct. I just, I got stuck on that word because they say something about that in the movie. But yes, he likes men and women. So Spiro knows no limits.
And Stan is not having that, by the way.
No.
Are we going to swing or what?
And you know what? Before we get into the really cool shot with this pool thing, I think you guys have been waiting for one of these. So maybe we just have to take a little time for a nice little dip into the kink tank.
Kink tank.
I was waiting for this.
Yes.
So guys, we've been talking a lot about swinging, and I just wanted to let you know that there are many different kinds of swinging. Most lifestyle enthusiasts don't meet up for fleshy, bacchanalian free-for-alls. Like any relationship, people have different boundaries and desires. Some couples have bisexual women and men, and some are straight, only swinging with members of the opposite sex or gender. Some couples are only into soft swinging, which doesn't include actual intercourse and focuses more on touching and kissing, while other couples are into watching, and others are, you know, some are exhibitionists. There's also closed swinging, where partners swap and go to separate rooms, and open swinging, which is means that everyone shares the same space, like we were watching on Channel 69. Nice. Yeah, so I mean, that's basically it. Also, you guys should know that the key swapping thing. Where you
put Mike, I was going to ask you about key parties. What
key parties,
about that?
They were a thing back in the 70s, like you'd see those in those movies. But this day and age, they're actually not very common. Things are much more safe. It's common for swingers to actually be more likely to have safe sex and be more responsible with you know, their partners and whatnot, because it is a lifestyle and they respect each other.
Thanks, Mike.
Interesting.
And now back to the pool full of sexual lubricants.
Sex lubricant.
Oh, by the way, a lot of that was from Ranker.com. Just a little, I didn't write all that.
Cherry is at the end of the pool, and Spiro gets in, and he's getting all worked up, and there's just this layer of fog across the top of the pool with Cherry's head sticking out of it.
It's like you know exactly what's going on. You know what happened because Cherry was left alone for several minutes.
Yeah,
she hasn't even been around for a while. So it's not a surprise what's going on. But yeah, the shot just looks cool.
It does.
It's really good.
Probably my favorite shot of the movie.
Yeah, it's like a POV from Cherry. So she's like in the pool, and you see him constantly walking towards her, and through the fog and the water. And it's very well
Mike,
done.
Mike, is it water?
I'm sorry. Sexual lubrication.
Sex lubricant.
Yeah, he picks up a handful of the water. He's like grossed out at
slime,
first.
Slime, yeah.
And then he picks it up. It's all slimy. He's like, oh, is this slime? Or wait, is it sexual lubrication?
Sex lubricant.
He's got a fucking pool filled with
He's got a pool of it. Of course
lube.
He has the swingers.
He bought that 55-gallon drum of lube off Amazon.
Jeez, you'd need more than that. You'd need like 100 of those fuckers. It's a big pool.
And as he's getting a little close and getting into it, tentacles pop out and kill him, drag him under the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you like tentacle porn, this thing might get you going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really show a lot of Spiro's death, but he's gone. And,
Definitely gone. Well, this is the next surprising thing for me is that at this point, Mom and Dad are coming in. They're going to give the talk to Spiro because, you know, they're just not into that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're more of the, like Mike was saying, they're into more of the straight sort of swapping. So they're going to go in and, oh, go ahead, Mike.
I was gonna say Dad's a little homophobic, but.
Yeah, just a little. And they go in there and they're going to confront them, but where'd they go? And why did they vomit so much into the pool?
Oh, my God. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
God.
It just looks like the fog is gone. It looks like someone puked in the pool all over it.
It's very gross. It's
so
really gross.
Oh. And
but then the monster.
They do finally see the monster, right? And it stabs.
Right now, yep.
It stabs Stanley.
Yeah, kills them both. Mom and Dad are
both
gone.
Both of them are gone right now,
yeah.
Did not see that coming. Like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
No, yeah, they really, the movie suffers a bit from that someone's away from the group for a bit, so you know they're going to die. But here they just go, fuck it, let's just kill them all right now.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Oh, my God.
And I love now what Sherman does alone. Next. Sherman's determined to get out of this bunker because he's locked in. So he blows the doors off with plastic explosives.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, oh, hey, it'll blow your balls off. So be careful with it.
Let's see. Susie and OD come back and Sherman confronts them with a machine gun.
There's a monster loose. It ain't Grandpa. I think it just ain't Mom and Dad. Honestly, Sherman, sometimes you are such a nerd.
They go through the house. OD steps in what's left of Gramps. Yeah. They all find the jacuzzi room. Yeah. Sherman, of course, because as Crisp said, has poor trigger control, shoots into the water. We have OD. Yeah. OD sees Pluthar's warning. And Pluthar's saying, if you have a satellite dish on your planet, destroy them all for 200 years or you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
He wants Earth to get rid of their satellite dishes for 200 years.
This is amazing because, like, this is where I'm like, ah, shit. He's going to die because they separated again, right? Like, OD's in the pool room, the pleasure dome, and then the bro and sis go to try to find Mom and Dad. So they sneak up. This is, I think, my favorite scene of the movie.
Okay, take it.
They sneak over to the bedroom, their mom and dad's bedroom. Oh. They knock on the door, and then so they're like, peek in the door, and they're like, mommy, daddy, and then mom and dad pop their heads out of from under the covers with the swingers' heads, and they're all in bed. So then the kids are disgusted. And as there was a little exchange, and as they turn to leave, the son goes, realizing that his parents aren't dead or thinking his parents aren't actually dead, says, have you seen Gramps? And then Gramps pops up out of the covers.
Right here, honeybee.
He's in there too.
Just getting business done or something. It's amazing.
And I did hear the actor talking about when he had to do that scene. He kind of like... sort of just had a vague idea of what was that scene was supposed to really be about, you know, that they're so, like they're all in bed together, like it wasn't like totally clear.
Fucking amazing.
Oh, it was so great.
And so Sherman really only doubts himself for a brief second before the monster pops out again.
Yeah.
And they all have to run from it. And it nearly kills OD, first of all. I was getting worried.
It's true.
Well, until another great moment in the movie. So OD falls down on the floor, and he's got, you know, his leather glove studded kind of like forearm thing, and he's like covering his face, and the monster sees it. That's a fucking flashback. Yeah. Oh, my God. We see monster as a flashback. To when it was just a pet.
Yeah.
And its master had a similar glove and would feed it.
Oh, and I love this. OD's like,
did you see that? He looked right at my studs and cooled out. This dude's into metal.
Yeah, like, fucking OD knew that's what the monster was looking with the two eyes that go in completely opposite directions and the penis eye that is you can't look at it without just dying.
Oh, and then okay, so then like they get the idea, they want to feed it or whatever, and OD goes,
hey, you guys remember that movie? You know, the one about the little space guy. Made you cry like a butthole.
Yeah, E.T.?
Oh my God.
Yeah. What did he pull up? So he says that because he's like, I'm going to feed it something. So he has a little cardboard box.
You're going to cry like a butthole.
What is in that cardboard box?
I think it was a Twix. It looked like a Twix.
Okay, that would make more sense. I'm looking at it and I'm like, is that a fucking like breakfast sausage? What is this?
Leo, it looked like a breakfast sausage, but I think it was a Twix. It was some sort of like chocolate bar kind of thing.
Okay, that makes more sense. It was very smooth and I was very confused. Like, is that a sausage? Like, is this Frank Reynolds here? Because I am into it.
Oh, yeah. So they teach it about food and music.
This is where it becomes a Charles Band movie, like signature movie.
Yeah.
Kids movie, at least. For a second, this dips into Charles Band kids territory, like pre-hysteria or something, where they found a little animated monster, and now they're going to feed it and shit.
You know what? Now I really want to see fucking Josh Kirby Terror Vision.
Oh man. The monster would just eat Josh Kirby and I'd be fine
yeah,
with it.
Yeah, it would. That'd be fine. God. This is also where the movie becomes, Jay, as you're saying, they're teaching it like food and stuff. And this is where the movie literally takes not just a tonal shift, but an editing shift, where now it has like star wipes and shit, but yeah. They're the shapes of like music notes and lightning bolts. And it's just, that's nowhere else in the movie. It's as if Charles Band decided to edit this or make this fucking part of the movie. And that's why it's this way. And that's why it's got all the weird shit in it. And it doesn't fit with the tone of the rest of the movie.
Yeah, but I mean, it fits with what they're trying to do because it is a fun, kind of friendly. They're teaching the monster how to talk. They're teaching the monster how to eat food. They're all like, hey, this is music. It's almost as good as food kind of stuff.
So then Susie decides they're going to make a bunch of money off this thing. And so they want Medusa. They keep calling Elvira constantly. That's what they're doing. Yeah. So they call Medusa and they try to convince her to come over to their house to have a party. Because they think if we can get her to see this monster, like, we'll make a bunch of money by getting it on TV. Yeah. And she doesn't really seem to care. But then the cops have been so annoyed with Sherman calling them so much that they show up to arrest Sherman.
Yeah, they've got a warrant for arrest.
Yeah,
Sherman.
For calling the non-emergency line a few times.
Yeah, yeah. So they're trying to deal with that. And then Pluthar comes on the TV. The monster, it's been going okay with the monster. He's been learning.
Yeah.
And then he sees Pluthar and flips out. The cop hears it, and then OD slaps the monster and goes, "Shut up, butthole." And so that's the end of OD, pretty much. Like,
it sucks his face off.
Yeah. Yeah. I miss the word butthole, guys. It used to be such, or butt juxtaposed to other words. Butthead, butt face, you know.
Butt fuck.
Or butt. Just call someone a butt.
A butt.
You're being a butt. Like, I miss that, you know? Might try to bring it back.
Well, is that a rating suggestion, Mike?
That's not a bad idea. But OD has a pretty great
butthole. OD?
that's his signature, like, insult, is butthole.
Yeah. It's a good one.
It is.
Oh, butt munch. That was always a good one.
Yeah? That's a good one.
Not used in this movie, though.
That was a good one, though.
Pretty much, okay, the movie then moves out to All Out War. Sherman throws a grenade. The cops close in. Cop gets eaten.
Yeah. But Jay, real quick, can you quickly edit in the soundbite of what Sherman says when he throws the grenade?
You mean this?
We're gonna blow his butt to kingdom come.
Because he uses my favorite word. He does say, "We're gonna blow his butt to kingdom come." It's so good.
Yeah, so Sherman gears up again, and he's going on the offensive. OD, this is hilarious. OD is a puddle on the floor now, but with studded bracelets, his studded bracers in the puddle. The parents are like a big pile of green roast beef.
Ugh. Real Arby's situation.
Yeah. Yep. And so they find the monster in the jacuzzi in the Pleasure Dome, right?
Yeah.
And he's watching alien movies and laughing at them.
Yes, he is. He's loving it. He's cheering them on. His like one his claw hand is like doing like the Arsenio. That's great.
And Chris, you were in Army. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could talk about how crappy of a soldier Sherman is here.
Oh my god. Well, first of all, he has very little situational awareness because his whole plan, he sees the remote control for the whole Pleasure Dome's electronics. And earlier they said that, you know, don't touch the remote control because it'll electrocute the shit out of you or something. So now that's their whole plan. They're going to electrocute the shit out of the monster. So Sherm is going to sneak his way over to the remote control and just chuck it into the pool, right?
Good plan. Good plan.
The movie. Great plan. What he failed to realize is the trail of slime from OD, their parents, the swinger.
One of them.
It's not clear, but there's a whole trail of slime.
Sex lubricant.
leading from where Sherman is walking to the remote control. And he slips and slides in this shit for what seems like 20 minutes. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa. And then he finally does. And then the monster sees him. And it's like, ah, leaving his sister to avoid the slime, grab the fucking remote, and just throw it into the pool. Was that so hard, Sherman? Come on.
It wasn't. And I believe his gun goes off again, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But the monster does grab Sherman with one of the tentacles. And so Sherman is then, for the next handful of shots, just hacking away at that fucking tentacle. He's with a knife.
Yeah.
We do get a special... They end up running out of the pleasure zone, or pleasure dome.
Of course.
Into the living room and are greeted by a surprise guest.
Pluthar, baby.
Pluthar. Remember Pluthar?
That's right. He's going to save the day. The fucking captain of sanitation is here to pay for all his mistakes.
Yep.
And give a lot of explanation for what the fuck this monster actually is.
Which I appreciate. Mm-hmm. He does give us some story behind the thing. These monsters are actually like cats or dogs. And they're quite nice, he says, under most conditions.
Until they mutate.
And then they need to be exterminated. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Pluthar, what I also found interesting was the family has a chance to come back to life, right? Because all Pluthar has to do is get the DNA out of the monster, and then he can remake the parents.
So there is some hope in this movie. It's a very hopeful movie.
It is. Well, I mean,
they're not clones.
They're not clones. They're their own selves. And there's a throwaway line here that kind of changes it, though, right? Like,
well, they need to live in their own aquarium.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean,
they're not clones. They're totally normal.
Totally fine.
Totally the same.
Otherwise, they're themselves.
This is the point where Medusa shows up, finally.
Yes.
Now, this looks like a happening party.
Impressed by the party that's going on, by the way.
She also sees Pluthar.
And she realizes that Sherman wasn't lying on the phone. He was telling the truth. There is a monster at his house.
Yeah, and this monster, Pluthar, has a gun pointed vaguely in Sherman's direction. No,
that's not the monster, Chris. Why would you hurt Pluthar?
Well, because Medusa's coming in and sees an imminent threat to Sherman and his sister. This boy and girl who have been calling her and talking to her all night. And there is a monster waving some sort of vaguely gun-shaped object in their general vicinity. Of course he's a threat. Of course that's the monster.
So Medusa sees Pluthar, nails his helmet and cracks it.
Not so fast, asshole!
Because he's wearing a helmet for, you know, his little atmosphere or whatever. And I thought this was actually pretty funny.
His fucking it was head pretty explodes. Great. Yeah. His head explodes in the helmet.
Pops.
Oh my god!
Like they're
pops.
Like, "Hey, Pluthar's here. Everything's gonna be okay."
Yeah. No. Yeah. And it would have been fine if no one had called fucking Medusa.
Yeah. He's got like he like punches his mask, his helmet, and then like it cracks it, and so like his air pressure, whatever is happening, comes out, and then his head just pops inside. Oh,
god. Yep.
It's fantastic.
The wall bursts apart and the monster's screaming and its like tongue is just going a mile a minute.
It's just oh yeah.
It's a fucking intergalactic Kool-Aid man.
Yeah, it really is.
Now everything is flying toward it. Look, there's this giant wind, everything's blowing around, and Sherman goes flying at the creature's mouth and it cuts to black. Yeah. And then
everything's okay.
It turns out everything's fine. The
Sherman had Pluthar's gun, and he's trying to get it to work. Mm-hmm. And so surely, as he's being sucked into the vortex of this creature's gaping maw, he gets the gun to work, cut to black, everything's cool.
We find out that's what happens. He saves the day. Medusa hires him on as a sidekick, and the daughter grows up to be Cyndi Lauper. And the parents come back to life, though mixed together with the swingers. So they're kind of what?
No.
What?
No. No.
No.
No. I can't. I cannot let these lies stand.
No. Sorry.
We see Medusa's driver has fallen asleep in the car. It's morning, and he is woken up by.
Oh yeah.
By Medusa, right? Is it Medusa?
This sounds familiar. This sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, Medusa. It's not Medusa.
No. What?
He looks into the back seat. and it's the creature with Medusa's head.
Ah! The horror! The horror!
And then it cuts to this theme song again.
All the characters die. They all die.
Everybody dies. It's such a downer ending.
It is
to,
a downer
to
ending.
Then, yeah, to oh. then take over. Well, it's gonna. The creature's gonna take over the world because he's going to the studio, Medusa's studio, to then broadcast out. But I'm assuming that means the monster could just go wherever the fuck it wants and just eat.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's what I took it as.
Rating time.
Crazy Chris Hudson.
All right, what are we rating these in?
Oh, I was going to say we should rate this in Holy Tomatoes, but now
Holy
since,
Tomatoes!
Now since you guys were talking about, you know, Mike wants to bring Butthole back, I guess. We can rate it in OD Buttholes.
Okay, I like it.
All right, well, my rating, like I said earlier in the show, I saw this movie when I was, I don't know, 12 or 13 or
you
something.
You better not
I
give mean, it 12 I'm... or 13.
Oh, you don't know where I'm going with this review yet, Jay. Oh. So I saw it when I was really young on some sort of like independent UHF channel back when that was still a thing. I don't know how my parents let me watch this. It must have been later at night or something. I don't remember anything about this movie. So I was really excited to get back into this. And it did not disappoint. There were so many clips that when I watched it or heard that theme song, I'm like, oh yeah, oh my God, this is it started coming back to me. And oh man, it did not disappoint. It was such a fun, campy sort of, I mean, it's totally stupid. It's not like, you know, high art or anything, but there were so many great lines. The character, all the characters were just so much fun. This is just a fucking fun movie. And I mean, there were a couple little slow moments, I think, in that third act, when they started teaching the monster how to talk and stuff. It slowed down just a little bit. So it's not a perfect movie by any means, but I don't know. And if you're just looking for something just ridiculous and fun and just stupid that knows what it is, but does not take itself at all seriously, I mean, this is a great one to watch. So I'm going to give this one, you know, I can't do 69, so I'm going to go 89. OD Buttholes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, real good.
This was great. I love this movie.
Mike, let's pass it to you.
I had the same problem, Chris, at the end there. I was like, I really wanted to rate it 69 because it's just such a good number. You know, it's very nice. But you can't because the movie is better than 69. I mean,
yeah,
it's nicer than 69. it is. It's a fucking 80s cheese fest, and it's very fun. Oh, my God. And if you, especially if you haven't seen it, you should see it and then watch it a second time because it's dumb. It's fast paced. It doesn't let down. It's man, it's fucking stupid and it knows it and it's great. So I'm going 90 OD Buttholes.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Jay.
Yeah.
What do you got?
You know, I thought this movie is totally unique. I really can't think of any other movie like this one, and it is a complete camp fest. Yeah, and like, you're right, it's stupid. Everybody knows it's stupid, but like, they all just said, let's make a fun stupid movie, you know. Like I said, the director told the creature designer to make the creature look stupid. So like they knew they were making this weird quirky comedy, and I think it really worked. I think just about anybody who likes B movies is gonna have a blast with this. So I am going to go 92 OD Buttholes.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm the low one. Wow.
Yeah. And, but I mean, so this is, might be one of our higher rated movies on the podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't do the math, but it's something like 90.5 or something.
It's up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks guys. I'm glad you guys all had fun with this one. I've been wanting to pick it for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually almost picked this one myself because I hadn't seen it in so long.
Cool.
And, and you know, I believe, so Jay, this is your pick. I believe my pick is next.
You know, Chris, I'm glad. Yeah, I think it is your, guys, what is that? Do you see that?
Yeah, no, out the window?
Out the window right there.
Can I see that too?
Oh, God. Chris. Is that, Is that who I think it is?
Chris, can you make the sound of a jetpack so I don't have to edit it in?
Hey, Jay, I'll do the sound of the voice that's supposed to happen now so you don't have to edit that in.
Oh, thank you. Go ahead.
Wah, I'm Paul!
Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Brooks is back.
Hey, guys, you see that jetpack back there? What is that?
Yeah.
The one you came in on?
That's the one you flew in on, Paul.
That was pretty awesome, Paul. That's awesome.
Hold on. I'm not on a jetpack literally all the time, okay? I came in through the front door.
Then what the fuck was that?
That's what I'm asking. I don't know.
Oh. Maybe it was a TerrorVision beamed monster. We just watched TerrorVision, Paul.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to pop in and ask if you guys enjoyed my Diane Franklin interview.
Oh, well, it hasn't happened yet, and because we're not releasing that till later this week. But
I thought that.
But yes, Paul, we loved it. I
thought that usually comes out a couple days before the full episode. No,
I don't know.
it's either before. It's one of the Thursdays.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we don't know.
All right, people have enjoyed it or not yet. We don't know.
Hey, you know what? You either have something to look forward to or something to think back upon. And you know what? I think it's important either way.
Correct.
So what are you doing here, Paul?
So, Paul, why are you
Paul,
here?
What's up?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you know, if I'm being real honest, I kind of miss you guys. I kind of miss the podcast a little bit.
Aww. I miss us too, Paul.
You know, I figured I'd, since I'm here, what do you guys think about maybe me popping in and hosting an episode for season 3? What do you think?
What?
Yeah,
you're back
full
time now?
No.
Oh,
wow, thanks, Paul.
No.
Things are just like old times.
We got a whole round of movies to watch.
Thanks for coming back, Paul.
You got plenty of stuff to watch.
Thanks for coming back.
Oh. What do you mean?
Just one episode. Just one. There was one. No, listen.
God damn it.
Listen.
Right. God damn it.
Last season, there was one movie that I really wanted to review that we didn't quite get around to. So I was hoping to do that now for this episode for season 3.
Oh, wait, Paul. Yeah, absolutely. Let me hit that tone, the next time on tone. Hold on a second. Let me hit that.
Okay.
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
There we go. Okay. Now that the appropriate sound is playing, Paul, what are we going to watch next week?
All right, guys. Save up all your pocket change for the disco walking tour. Demand free drinks, and add a little extra grease because it's time for the Greasy Strangler. Oh, yes.
Fuck. All right.
Oh, I've heard of this.
I've been waiting so long.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Hey, I'm completely clueless. I have no idea what the fuck this
Hudson,
is.
Perfect. You
Hudson,
are going...
that's perfect.
Oh, my God, Hudson.
All right.
This is somewhat notorious, isn't it?
Indeed.
This makes so much sense.
All right, where can I watch this goddamn piece of crap?
Chris, you'll be happy to know you can watch it for free on Amazon Prime.
Oh, nice.
Mm.
Wait, Jay, should I have called this a piece of butt crap?
Yeah, you should have.
We're trying to bring butt back in.
Paul,
so.
Is this movie going to make Chris cry like a butthole?
I think that's an accurate statement, yes.
All right.
Paul, do you think Chris Hudson, while watching this movie, is going to get the real butt munchies?
Let me just say this. I think Chris Hudson's a big old smoothie. That's a little teaser for you there.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, there you go, folks. We got Paul Brooks back full time now.
One episode.
And we're going to be next time. We're going to watch The Greasy Strangler. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on B-Movie Mania.
I have a question for Paul.
Oh, okay.
Paul, I know you've left. I know you're only coming back for one. We want it for more. But I know since you haven't been around as much, do you still follow us on social media?
I do, yeah.
Oh, like Twitter and Instagram and Facebook?
Yeah, I follow you on Twitter at B. Let's see, what is it? Hold on, I'm a little rusty. BMM Podcast.
That's right.
And
that's
then
it.
On Instagram, B Movie Mania, all one word. And Facebook, you know, if you just type in B Movie Mania, I still do all of it.
Oh,
Paul,
that's fantastic.
Let me ask you something. Since you've lost all of your clothing, do you still buy our t-shirts on our website, bmoviemania.com?
Since I lost all of my clothing, I wear exclusively B Movie Mania t-shirts, which you can get by going to bmoviemania.com. Yes, indeed.
Awesome.
Does that include pants to cover your butt?
It doesn't. It's just t-shirts, and it doesn't work out very well. We should really get some pants on there.
We have sweaters you can buy. You can kind of zip them up as pants.
You know how ridiculous I've been looking walking around Joshua Tree just wearing that B-Movie Mania t-shirt?
Oh. Well, Paul, thanks for wearing the t-shirt.
Sure. Yeah. I'm sure really you fit in at Joshua Tree, though.
Oh, big
let's
time.
Let's be honest.
Yeah. Going tomorrow.
Well, speaking of Paul, also, this is actually really convenient that you're here, because I believe you and I are in the middle of our run of a cable access TV show right now.
I thought it just started like a half hour ago.
Yeah, well, in reality it did. Oh. But of our 12 episodes spanning 24
this podcast, Paul, this podcast, I know it's been a while since you've been around, but this podcast does not go out live.
Got it. Sorry, I forgot. Yeah, we're right smack dab in the middle of it, and it's going well.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I got to watch the premiere instead of recording this, thankfully. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool. But yeah, if you're watching it, you know, if you live in Chicago, you can go to CanTV19 and
on your TV, like on a real TV,
on actual television, cable access,
like a Terror Vision television.
Yes. Exactly. Be careful. But it's on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. and it repeats Fridays at 4 p.m. And then we're releasing episodes on YouTube, our YouTube channel, B-Movie Mania. And you can watch them there too. And there's already a bunch up now and there's more to come. So check it out. It's fucking weird. And Paul especially put a lot of work into it.
Only about 5 years. No big deal.
Yeah, it's a bit old. But it's great. It still holds up. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Are we done with the promos?
I'll see you guys next week.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydy? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out! Touch them! They're touching themselves. And they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
Can you guys hear that?
Yes.
Ha 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 ha